From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. A major defeat at the U.S. Supreme Court today for the Bush administration's anti-terrorism policies. The High Court ruled that the president cannot unilaterally order enemy combatants to be detained indefinitely, regardless of whether the accused are American citizens. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
Since 9/11, the Bush administration has maintained that it has the right to lock up enemy combatants seized abroad or on U.S. soil and to hold them incommunicado indefinitely. But today, the U.S. Supreme Court squarely rejected that assertion in a set of three opinions with shifting majorities. By a vote of 8-1, the High Court ruled against the administration in the case of Yasser Hamdi, an American-born Saudi captured in Afghanistan and held in a Navy brig for almost 2 years now. Hamdi was not captured by American forces, but was turned over to U.S. troops by the Northern Alliance, which was routinely paid a bounty for captured prisoners. His father has claimed that the 20-year-old was a relief worker caught up in the fog of war, and his lawyer told the Supreme Court in April that he was forbidden to discuss the details of the case, even at the nation's highest court, because the executive branch had deemed the information classified. In the lower courts, the administration presented an affidavit written by a Pentagon official summarizing field reports that the official said justified Hamdi's detention. But today, the U.S. Supreme Court said that Hamdi had not been given the due process of law required by the Constitution.
We won big time.
Frank Dunham is the public defender who went to court on Hamdi's behalf. Yes, he acknowledges, the court gave Hamdi considerably fewer rights than a criminal defendant, but said Dunham, it will be enough.
Our primary position was always that, hey, at bottom, the man at least needed to be able to file for a petition for writ of habeas corpus. He needed to have an opportunity to contradict whatever the government said about him by introducing proofs and testimony of his own. He needed to have a neutral fact finder who was not biased or prejudiced in the case, and he needed to have the assistance of a lawyer. All of those things the Supreme Court recognized that we had a right to have.
The court's primary opinion in the Hamdi case was written by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. She said that in the years since his capture, Hamdi had received, quote, no due process. She dismissed out of hand the administration's claims that its screening process and its interrogation of Hamdi had given him a chance to contest his designated status as an enemy combatant. The administration's approach, she said, had served to condense power in a single branch of government, the executive. And we have long since made clear, said O'Connor, that a state of war is not a blank check for the president. She then laid out a general roadmap for what would be minimally acceptable under the Constitution, including notice of the factual basis for the classification, a fair opportunity to rebut the alleged facts, and the assistance of a lawyer. At the same time, she said, courts should be deferential to the needs of the executive branch. For example, hearsay evidence might well be permitted, and even an assumption that the government's facts are right, as long as the accused has the right to rebut that presumption. Joining O'Connor's opinion were Chief Justice Rehnquist and Justices Kennedy and Breyer. Justices Souter and Ginsburg joined the opinion to make a majority, though they would have released Hamdi immediately on other grounds. And Justices Scalia and Stevens contended that the government either had to try Hamdi in a criminal court for treason, which requires two eyewitnesses to a treasonous act, or let him go. The only other alternative, they maintained, would be to get the Congress to authorize suspension of the writ of habeas corpus, the right to challenge one's imprisonment in court. Said Scalia, if civil rights are to be curtailed during wartime, it must be done openly and democratically, as the Constitution requires, and not by silent erosion through an opinion of this court. Dissenting was Justice Clarence Thomas, who contended that the government's overriding interest in protecting the nation supersedes Hamdi's right to liberty. With Hamdi's case was a companion case brought by Jose Padilla, a U.S. citizen seized at O'Hare Airport 2 years ago and held since without access to the courts and until recently without access to an attorney. The government has said it believes Padilla was planning terrorist activities in the United States. The Supreme Court punted in his case, however, declaring by a 5-4 vote that because the government had moved him secretly from New York to South Carolina, Padilla's court-appointed lawyers were wrong to seek his release in New York. The court thus remanded the case to the federal courts in South Carolina, but it would appear that a majority of the justices are likely to hold the government to a standard at least as high as in the Hamdi case, and very probably a higher standard, since Padilla was not arrested overseas but on U.S. soil. And finally, the court ruled that the government does not have absolute power to detain foreigners at the naval base at Guantanamo. By a vote of 6-3, the court, in an opinion written by Justice John Paul Stevens, declared that the prisoners can go to the federal courts to challenge their confinement. Georgetown Law Professor David Cole.
The bottom line is a resounding rejection of the Bush administration's claim that the executive has unchecked unilateral authority to lock people up indefinitely by labeling them enemy combatants, or as President Bush puts it, bad guys.
Like Cole, Deborah Perlstein of Human Rights First has been a dogged critic of the administration's detention policies.
These are not liberal members of the court. The opinions by O'Connor, the opinion by Scalia, says very clearly that a state of war is not a blank check for the president.
Johns Hopkins University professor Ruth Wedgwood has supported the overall detention policies, but she sees today's rulings in the context of recent revelations.
Well, I think they're going to be taken as a general prescription for the rule of sunlight, which is always, I think, the wise political rule as well. Don't do anything that you wouldn't want to have on the front page of the New York Times or on NPR.
The administration was largely silent in its reaction today, but John Yoo, who helped craft the administration's policies before leaving to become a professor at the University of California, saw today's rulings as more a win than a loss.
In these opinions, the court recognized that September 11th did start a war, and that as part of that war, the United States can detain enemy combatants, and that when faced with the unfortunate choice of having its own citizens join up with al-Qaeda, can detain them on American soil.
You predicted that the administration would eventually ask Congress to pass new legislation on detentions.
Not before the election, but after the election they could. I mean, that would be the most sensible outcome.
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.